The Speakeasy Podcast Network.
While listening to That Horror Show Podcast.
Season 4, Episode 29, That Other Halves Episode, recorded Tuesday, January 23rd, 2018. Hello and welcome back, dear listeners and fans. Happy New Year. That Horror Show Podcast, THSP, is back for our fourth season. Woohoo! As always, we are your faithful hosts, Tim and Chris, and we are starting this season off with a bang. Tonight is going to be something special. Tonight, we have the distinct honor of reviewing an indie horror film called The Other Halves, which is a unique and interesting film to say the least. If you've never heard of it, don't feel bad. More coming up on that soon. But first, Chris, how the hell are you, buddy?
Yes, Tim, I really did enjoy our break. It was great that we had that Christmas and New Year's off, so that way we can just sit back and recover a little bit. Because even though we do, like, what, one show a month, it does take quite a bit of work, you know?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, yeah, we sit back and we watch movies, but we do have to prepare for what we talk about, or at least get the information we need ready. So, besides that, nothing really interesting has been going on with me except, you know, watching the snowfall and then getting rain, and today we get some snow again, so I can't really say I've had much of an interesting past couple of weeks. But Tim, I'm sure you have had some interesting things have happened.
Oh, man, there's been a lot of stuff that's going on, man. First of all, during the winter break, did a lot of sledding. You know, up in here in Minnesota, that's what you kind of do in the winter. Sledding, ice skating, skiing, and with the kids being off for school for 2 weeks, we did that. I saw The Last Jedi twice. Saw the family film Ferdinand about the bull, which is a cartoon film with John Cena. That was actually very good. And finally, I saw Pitch Perfect 3, which I'll be talking about later. You know, and then we went bowling, and actually there was an actual hand to God, a roller skating rink right by our house. So I actually went roller skating like back in the 80s. Like, it was very cool. It was like a throwback for me. I mean, like, they had actual roller skates, not inline skates, but roller skates. So, and they had like a DJ, and it was really, really cool.
Did you dress up in that 80s style to get into the whole...
I left the parachute pants and the wife beater at home.
Okay.
But that's what I did. And I also have some news. I'm currently working on a Supernatural retrospective television show podcast, and I hope to have that up and running very soon. And it will be made available right here at thathorrorshowpodcast.podbean.com. So stay tuned to our official Facebook page and Twitter for more information to come.
And so, Tim, I was going to ask, though, what made you come up with the idea of doing that? I mean, just out of curiosity.
The Supernatural retrospective?
Yeah.
Well, basically because any long-time listener of the show knows that it's one of my favorite television shows currently on network television, and I kind of wanted to pay homage to the show that's been on for 13 seasons, going on 14 seasons, and I thought...
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yep. So this podcast is going to be quite interesting, I hope that people enjoy it, and we plan on doing covering about two episodes starting per podcast, starting with the pilot episode and going all the way through wherever they leave off. But
wow! So let's see, that's how many seasons? That's 18 seasons.
Yeah.
and how many episodes are? Because I did watch Supernatural from season one to season I think five, and this was back when it was. When the show was beginning,
and
this was when Mark, our lovely associate Mark L. Risman, lived a little closer around the vicinity near me, and I used to borrow the seasons from him. Yeah. And then, you know, but I think I stopped by season five. Not that I didn't like it; I did like the show. I just began to lose track of it.
Yeah, it can be daunting.
But still, 18 seasons, man. Well, I mean, how many episodes?
That's not going to have ourselves. 13 seasons going into, I think they've been renewed to a 14th season. So not
18. Oh, sorry, I thought it was 18. No,
no. It may feel like that, but no.
Oh, okay, yeah, so 13 seasons going on to 14. Yeah. So, like, how many episodes do you think are, like, within each season?
Each season roughly runs between 22 to 24 episodes, except for, I think it was season 2 or 3, which is only was about 17 episodes, and that was because of the writer's strike.
Oh, okay.
But, yeah, so it's a lot. They're going on, like, their 300th episode, or coming up on their 300th episode pretty soon. I'd say maybe next season, looking like to be a very, very good it's going to happen.
Well, it's interesting how it's. What is the longest running show that's on today?
I don't know. I mean, I know Grey's Anatomy, for example, has been on just about as long as Supernatural. They both started at the same time.
Yeah, but what about The Simpsons? The Simpsons have been on
but I was talking about 1-hour dramas. I mean, yeah.
You're right. Yeah. Not a 1-hour drama, but
yeah,
still.
Yeah, The Simpsons have been on for like, 25 seasons or something like that? 89? So, yeah.
It's still on. Yeah. Still somehow doing very well.
Yeah. Kudos to them, man. Seriously, I mean, people have grown up, gone to college, graduated, started families, and they're still watching The Simpsons.
I know. Well, I haven't been watching them for a while because I just... Like I said before, we talked about this one time. It was, I just feel that the show has kind of lost a little bit of where it's gone. I mean, I'm one of those guys. I agree, shows have to evolve and everything, but there's just something about The Simpsons now, the recent episodes, the recent seasons that just haven't appealed to me. I'll go back and I'll watch like the early seasons, like you know, from season 2 or season 3, 4, 5. You know, but just the recent episodes have just kind of made me like go, it's not the same as it used to be. No, I give them credit for continuing onwards and being as successful as that show has been. I just wish that they would kind of take a step back and, you know, just try to see what else they can do, you know, but whatever, that's just me, but...
I meant to ask you. Now, back in December, back in our Christmas episode, I said you had some homework. Did you happen to watch Ash vs. Evil Dead?
No, I have not watched that yet. I'm sorry. I know. Well, you said I had some homework, but I think I failed to mention to you, Tim, that I was not really the world's greatest college student. So,
Christopher,
I know I got to check it out. I was actually just watching... I was on YouTube, and there's a show on Sirius XM called the Jim and Sam Show, which was originally the Opie and Anthony show, and then Opie and Anthony had gotten a little bit of a partnership split and everything, and it became something else. Anyways, I was checking out on YouTube. They had live video at the time of them interviewing Bruce Campbell, so okay. I was watching a little bit of that. And he was talking a little bit about Ash versus Evil Dead, and I I do have to check it. I know I have to. I've got so much stuff I'm trying to check out that it's just been, everything has just been falling on the wayside. So I mean, it's definitely a show. It's really on the list. It just every time I try to get to it, something else comes up, and it's not just movies. It's just in general stuff that come up. But I do agree. Yes, I totally failed that assignment. I accept the F. I know I need to get on the ball and see it.
Yes,
things get in the way.
Yes. Oh, I also happened to get caught up on the last on the current season, I should say, of The Walking Dead. So I'm all caught up with everything there since they're still on break for their. I think they're in their what, 8th or 9th season now too. So
yeah.
Anyway, I'm all caught up. Whatever the current season on AMC is, I'm caught up to it. are we ready to take our first commercial break and then just get into the meat and potatoes of this, or get into our What We Watch segment?
Oh, yes, the triumphant return of the What Have We Watched segment.
All right, so let's take our first quick commercial break, and we'll be back with our What Have We Watched segment.
Hey, guys, what are you doing?
Sit down, man. Crack a beer. I'm just telling Feeler about how Vlad the Impaler used to shove stakes up donkeys' asses. Dude, this dude is so fucking gross, but it's so fucking awesome.
It sure is, buddy.
If you want to learn about everything from Vlad the Impaler to anime to rap feuds, join us here at the Junk Drawer Podcast.
That's right. Crack a beer, learn a little, and we'll talk about
our junk!
Yeah, we're going to do that.
You can find us at thedrunkdrawerpod.podbean.com and at thespeakeasypodcastnetwork.tumblr.com. Also, we're on iTunes, Stitcher, Podcast Addict, or wherever you get your podcasts. The Junk Drawer.
Chris, I think it's time to flip on the old boob tube and head into our What We Watch segment.
Let me have your attention for a moment. Put that coffee down. Let's talk about something important. Because we're adding a little something to this month's sales contest. As you all know, first prize is a Cadillac Eldorado. You want to see second prize? Second prize is a set of steak knives. Third prize is you're fired. Somebody should stand up and strike back. Somebody should do something to them.
The hell exists on Earth?
Yes.
What can you do?
I gotta tell you, I'm ready to do the Dutch.
I know what I'll do. I'll go out and rob everybody blind and go to Argentina.
You think you're a thief?
We're just talking.
We are?
Yeah, we're just speaking about it.
Speaking about it is an idea. We're not actually talking about it.
No.
It's a robbery.
It's a robbery?
No.
And what is it we're so afraid of?
All you need a little boost.
Tonight is the thing.
So be it.
What happened?
We had a slight burglary.
Criminals come and they take, they steal the phones.
They stole the phones, they stole the...
You robbed the office.
Oh, sure, I robbed the office. Oh, sure.
You did that?
Will you get out of here?
How can you talk to me that way?
Are you talking to me?
Well, I talk to the police. I get nervous.
You know who doesn't?
Oh, who?
Thieves.
What's your name?
Al Pacino, Jack Lemmon, Alec Baldwin, Ed Harris, Alan Arkin, from the Pulitzer Prize winner, Glengarry Glen Ross.
This is how we keep score, Bubby.
If I can't contact you, I can't.
She's right there. The Barden Bell is an unlikely group of not men who somehow managed to win at something that didn't have to do with baking.
I can hear you.
They've graduated college, have spread their wings, and are attempting to fly.
Papaya Blair's delight with a shot of white privilege.
Hopefully not becoming the failures we all expect them to be.
I feel really good about where I'm at right now. I'm trying to get into vet school. Fingers crossed.
Where are they now?
My name is Fat Amy Winehouse, so let's get cracking.
I quit my job.
You got fired?
No, I quit. It's fine.
Oh, come on.
This is an overreaction.
I would do anything to sing with you guys again. Anything.
You guys, every year the USO puts on this performance to support the troops in Europe. What if I could get us an invite? Yeah, I've suddenly got a bunch of free time, so... Hell yeah!
Here we go, here we go. It's my turn to make history.
Guys, we've never competed against bands that actually have instruments, so what's the plan?
I'm coming up, so you better get this party started. I'm coming out.
You guys just sing other people's songs, like karaoke.
Karaoke?
No.
That's so cute.
From Calamity, this is Serenity, Veracity, and Charity.
If I joined your group, I could be Obesity.
Here we go, here we go. When I'm young, they'll remember me.
Another day on stage for the Bellas. This is their big plummet.
Their fade out.
Into nothingness.
You sure about this?
Have I ever let you down?
All the time.
What?
You're very unreliable. It's like one of the hallmarks of your personality.
And you're not remembering all the times I've been awesome.
Oh!
Bang, bang! Bang, bang!
Let Taka finish this.
Yeah!
I love you, awesome nerds!
We'll stop till we let you.
Try to have some dignity.
Yeah, well, we don't do anything with dignity, okay?
They really do need to join the workforce.
Yes.
All right, Christopher, why don't you take it away, bud?
All right, so the film that I'll be talking about is... Glengarry Glen Ross from 1992, directed by James Foley and written by David Mamet. For all you listeners out there who think that I only wallow in viewing and reviewing low common denominator exploitation movies, consider this particular review a special surprise. Inasmuch as I have an admiration for exploitation trash cinema, I also have a particular fondness for movies that rely on such important traits like, oh, you know, good acting, solid writing, and an excellent sense of the dramatic. And I can admit with pride that I have plenty of Akira Kurosawa and Jean Renoir movies placed right next to the drive-in atrocities of Herschel Gordon Lewis. Strange, yes? Well, for me, not so much. I just like to toss around my cinematic horizons now and then, as opposed to the average movie watcher. But every now and then, I like to revisit a title that hovers about my mind, and that movie is none other than Glengarry Glen Ross. Ah, yes, that's right. After reviewing such, quote, illustrious, unquote, movies like Love Camp 7 and Thar She Blows for this segment, I'm bringing you a review for a really good movie. Indeed, it has come full circle, and oh yes, hell has frozen over. Glengarry Glen Ross involves a group of men who live by selling land. Haphazardly managed by John Williamson, played by Kevin Spacey, the sales agents consist of Ricky Roma, played by Al Pacino, Shelley Levine, played by Jack Lemmon, George Arano, played by Alan Arkin, and Dave Moss, played by Ed Harris. Times are tough, and some members of the team are having a little trouble selling prospecting land to potential leads. This results in a visit by Blake, played by Alec Baldwin, who basically badgers and berates the team for being weak and ineffectual in making a sale. Even worse, the company is having a special contest in which the first prize winner gets a Cadillac Eldorado car, the second prize winner gets a lousy pack of steak knives, and the third prize winner will end up getting fired. Before leaving, Blake presents a nicely wrapped stack of new cards labeled the Glengarry leads, which he has John lock up in a filing cabinet, as Blake doesn't feel the team deserves any of these leads at all. After Blake leaves, the group attempts to make their sales, even if the prospects are few and far between. But on the next day, it turns out someone broke into the office and stole the new leads, leaving the group to ponder and argue what will happen to their careers and their lives. While Glengarry Glen Ross doesn't have an exceptional storyline, the story isn't what drives the show. In fact, writer David Mamet hones his eyes on characters with personal dilemmas and hard-boiled dialogue. And the movie is carried thanks in large part to its main cast, giving this production the proper definition of the term actor's exercise. And the cast nails every moment on screen. Had this film featured no-name actors with little experience and directed by a stiff, Glengarry Glen Ross would just only be a minor stage play adapted to the big screen with little or nothing of merit. But with James Foley's assured direction, its simple one-location office setting making up most of the background, and a name cast that is here to perform and show off their acting chops, Glengarry Glen Ross is a perfect show in every aspect. You know, I wish I could say more about the movie, but if you haven't seen it, this review should pique your curiosity. It's highly recommended by yours truly. And just remember, ABC, always be closing. Always be closing. That's the quote from Alec Baldwin in the movie. So that's all I have, Tim.
Wow, that has piqued my interest. I haven't seen that movie in like forever. I guess I need to re-review that soon. I just remember the famous quote, "Coffee's for closers."
Yes, yeah. Alec Baldwin yells at poor Jack Lemmon.
Which he reprises that dialogue for Boss Baby, which is an animated family cartoon, which was had me rolling. And if you haven't had a chance to see Boss Baby, it's definitely a funny one to check out. And basically, there's these babies, and they're talking, and they're like they have like this special formula that makes them young all the time. They did drink out of bottles, but anyway, so it's like this covert mission operations, and there's this one big fat baby, and he's trying to eat the cookies. He's kind of like the slow one, right? And he's like, this had me rolling. He goes, "No, you don't get cookies. Cookies are for closers." And he slaps the chocolate chip cookie out of the fat kid's hand. Like you don't get any cookies.
I just love it's you have to laugh at the scene because it's serious, but the way Al Baldwin plays it, he's just getting at these guys where he just says to them, you know, like he says to Jack Lemmon, he says, "Put the coffee down. Yeah. Coffee's closes only." And he goes, was your name Levine? He goes, yeah. And he goes, you call yourself a salesman, you son of a bitch? You know? And he goes, and Harris is like, I don't have to take any of this shit. I'm leaving. And he goes, yeah, you certainly don't, pal, because the good news is you're fired. The bad news is you have a week to get your to keep your jobs. So yeah, I mean, it is a really good movie. I mean, I actually rewatched this because we were talking about this at my other job with somebody, and they mentioned the same thing. They're talking about how, you know, hey, coffee's for closers only. And I was like, oh, is that the scene with Alec Baldwin and Glengarry Glen Ross? I'm like, oh, I gotta check it out again, because I hadn't seen it in a while too. Yeah. It's interesting. It is an excellent movie. It's just very hard to categorize because it's based off of a play that David Mamet wrote, which he would adapt for the screen, and there really is no deep story there. It's basically just about these guys who are trying to make a living selling land, you know.
Right.
And it's really about their attitudes towards their business, their lives, you know, towards their boss, towards just everything. I mean, there is a story there. It's just not as cut and dry as one would expect, and it's one of the few movies that gets away with it pretty well, because said, I can imagine somebody else trying to do a movie like this with, like, very limited resources, and it probably would not be as good. But the reason why it works is because the performances are just there. I mean, Al Pacino is, you know, if one looks at Al Pacino, everybody looks at him as, like, being in Scarface and The Godfather, but here he gets to basically just play a guy behind a desk that gets mad at Kevin Spacey and just yells at him. He gets mad because he gets a terrible lead, and he just starts yelling at him in that Al Pacino way.
Right.
But it works. It just works when you consider the fact that he is just this guy behind this desk playing a character who has to sell land. Or Jack Lemmon, who's like this old grizzled guy that's like trying to make a sale, because he just needs that money, because I believe his character's daughter is in the hospital and he's trying to take care of her, and you feel real bad for him because he's just this guy that just wants a really good lead, and he can't get the good lead because Kevin Spacey won't give it to him, and you know, he's just left on his own devices to try his damnedest to just get a good lead. So,
oh, yeah.
But it is an excellent movie. I love it. So,
like I said, I'm gonna have to re-review it and rewatch it, whatever you want to call it. But yeah, it's like I said, it's been ages since I've seen the film, but I remember enjoying it. Just like what you said, just, you know, the minimalist locations and just everyone acting their nuts off in that film. You know,
right, and doing a damn good job of it too.
Right. So, oh well.
So what do you got, Tim?
Oh, I got a completely different movie. And it was my wife's turn to pick a film, considering I picked Last Jedi, and then we had to watch a kids' movie, so it was her turn to pick, and she picked Pitch Perfect 3, which is because, well, she loves the franchise, and I really liked the first film. The second film, to me, was okay, and I'm going to give my review for Pitch Perfect 3. So, Pitch Perfect 3 was released on December 22nd in 2017. It was directed by Trish Siri. It was written by Kay Cannon and Mike White, based off the original book written by Mickey Rapkin. Now, Pitch Perfect 3 picks up with the girls 3 years after the events of Pitch Perfect 2. All the ladies have graduated college and all have jobs in which they cannot stand or hate. And I think we've all can relate in some manner on that issue.
Oh, of course.
Now, each of the ladies from the Bellas, Becca, played by Anna Kendrick, Fat Amy, played by Rebel Wilson, Chloe, played by Brittany Snow, Audrey, played by Anna Kemp, and the rest of the ladies all longed for a time when they could go back and get back together and perform again. Enter Emily, played by Haley Steinfeld, now a senior at Barden and the leader of the new Barden Bellas. Emily invites all the Bellas to the New York Aquarium for what seems to the ladies to be an offer to do a reunion show. It wasn't. It was, however, an invite from their friend Emily to watch her and the new Bellas perform on stage. Now, the rest of the Bellas were extremely disappointed, but they still stayed for the show and supported their friend, but decided to hit the bar hard after and air their grievances to each other about their current jobs, lack of jobs, and just about life not turning out the way they thought it would. Emily apologizes as she believed it would be the only way for them to see each other again. The ladies expressed how much they missed each other and missed performing together in the whole sisterhood thing. Suddenly, Aubrey has an idea, and she convinces them to join a USO performance tour that her Army officer father could help them join. Now, if they win this competition, they get to open for DJ Khalid. So the ladies drop everything to jump at this once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. The ladies jet off to Spain for the first round of competition and meet the other musical groups. They then set up and rehearse for their first show. There is some conflict with all three groups as they battle each other for a chance to open for DJ Khalid and get a nice contract. This goes on throughout the film. The musical singing battles are a highly entertaining and an obvious highlight of the film as each group tries to dominate one another. The audience is then reintroduced to two of my favorite characters of this franchise, Gail, played by Elizabeth Banks, and John, played by John Michael Higgins, who were the Bellas' public announcers in the last two films. Here, they are following around the Bellas, making a film documentary on their rise and fall. I honestly think these two have some of the best one-liners and politically incorrect funny things to say. Anyway, they pop up throughout the film for comic relief, much like the two old balcony theater critics from the old Jim Henson's Muppet Show. There are some decent underlying issues explored in the film about absent fathers, family, and the friendship dynamics. Also, what will be the ladies' next step in life for this group, all of which are still in some way trying to find their own path. However, there is one glaring, and I do mean glaring, and just jaw-dropping dumb thing they did. And in my opinion, this severely hurts the overall film. It's an extremely unfunny and unsatisfying character arc for Fat Amy, played by Rebel Wilson, where her character has a distant father, Fergus, played by John Lithgow, who is completely wasted in his role as a criminal crime lord from Australia trying to obtain Fat Amy's trust fund inheritance because he's broke and desperate. She tells him off and tells him he gets nothing for continuing lying to her, abandoning her, and breaking her heart. So he kidnaps the musical group and holds them for ransom on his yacht, threatening to kill them if she doesn't help him get the money. So now it's up to Fat Amy, who is supposed to be this expert in martial arts and doing this Mission Impossible Tom Cruise zaniness, to help her rescue her friends with the help of Becca. Obviously, they try to play this to the hilt for comedy and laughs, but the whole thing falls flat on its face. Meanwhile...
I'm sorry. It sounds very implausible, particularly when the character is named Fat Amy.
Yeah, and that was the whole thing. I get what they were trying to do. It laid there like a French kiss at a family reunion. It just didn't work. Meanwhile, DJ Khalid is still in the process of selecting a winner for the competition. Will the Bellas win? Will their dreams come true? Well, you have to tune into the film to find out the final verdict. My final thoughts on the film: the best thing about this film is obviously the music. Well, and Anna Kendrick. Anna Kendrick is always awesome. Also, Elizabeth Banks and John Michael Higgins continue to be the funny scene-stealing duo since the beginning of this franchise. However, this franchise is starting to wear thin and feels a bit stretched out. I think it's time for the Pitch Perfect franchise to take its final bow. And that's what I got.
So you mentioned that the first film you liked, yeah, and the second film you thought was so-so.
Yeah.
So do you think that the third film, in a way, sort of made up for the second film, or was it just kind of like, well, it's just...
It was worse than the second film. I mean, if you're a fan, if you're a fan of the franchise like my wife is, you're gonna love it. For me, I only loved the first film because I thought it was unique and I thought it was funny, and you know, it should have been a one and done kind of movie. But they thought there was more there, so they decided to expand it and part two, and then part three it felt very forced. It felt very, like I said, stretched out. I'm like, yeah, you gotta stop now.
And you mentioned that there were these two characters in the film that gave out like the most politically incorrect critique.
Oh, it's
like can you like give an example?
Oh, they're just, you know what, you could Google it. I mean, not Google it, but YouTube the videos. But they're like sitting behind the desk and they're talking. I know you've never seen any of the movies, correct, Chris?
No, I haven't. Oh. So
watching the first film at least for Elizabeth Banks' character and John's character, absolutely hilarious. Like in this movie, they're like, you know, this working a video camera is complex stuff, you know, and it's a man's thing, you know. And she's like, "Oh, really? Because aren't you supposed to be recording?" He goes, "Yeah." He's like, well, how come the red light isn't working? It's just basically stuff like that. Like, he forgets to push the record button. He says stuff about France, and it completely, like, ludicrous, but funny stuff. I mean,
okay.
you know, basically they're basically sports announcers or broadcasters for first two films, and then doing this behind the scenes documentary for the third film. And I mean, just really funny stuff. I mean, you should check out at least the first film, Chris, because the first film is really good. And
yeah, I should check it out.
And
I mean,
like I said, those two characters, they just steal the show. even in part three, it's worth viewing just to see those two do their shtick.
Yeah. So in part three, it's basically as long as you wallow through the non funny stuff and get to their stuff, it's worth it.
watching the them sing and watching the comedic performances of Elizabeth Banks and John's characters, that's it. Obviously, the film would probably only be about 30 minutes long, but yeah, it's worth it. But like I said, it's part three is only for diehard fans of the franchise, like my wife.
But isn't that strange though, how in some films the first one's great and then the second one's okay, and then the third one just is like, you know, it's like a sliding scale.
Yeah.
When some films kind of do that whole, you know, series thing. So, I mean, it's very interesting you mention that, because that's why I asked you, was part three a little better than the second?
And I heard there's a rumor, I don't know how true it is, I read it online somewhere, that they were thinking of possibly doing a Fat Amy spinoff. I'm like, no, come on, you cannot take a kind of, like a character, a side character, and make her the focal point of another film. I mean, you could, I was never a fan of her character, so to me, it would be like a wasted opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't seen the movies yet, but I definitely can tell. I definitely could see that Fat Amy is not a memorable. not a memorable name.
she's like the best friend of the main character. So I mean,
is she called Fat Amy because she's fat? I mean, I'm just, you know.
Yeah, well, yes.
Well, no, because I remember in the Alfred Hitchcock movie Stage Fright. From 1950, his daughter's in the film, and she plays a character given the nickname Chubby, even though she's not chubby at all. You know, that's why I'm asking if you know.
No, she is large.
Do they give her a hard time about that too? It just sounds like something that would be done in a movie like this.
No. She pokes fun at herself throughout the three films about her weight. Nobody else does. But I would prefer to see, because I love Anna Kendrick, I would prefer to see a film about Becca or pretty much anybody else. But yeah, that's like I said, that's what I have. But I think Pitch Perfect, just, you know, they had a great run. There's no shame in their game. Just, you know, hang it up.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's all I have. You got anything else you'd like to talk about?
No, I think you've grilled me enough about Gary Glenn Ross, and I've asked questions with yours, so
yeah. Well, before we roll that trailer for the other halves from 2015, let's take our second commercial break.
Man, Chris, you suck at this.
Man, it's lag, shut it.
Maybe we should play Final Fantasy Mystic Quest.
I got next.
Son of a goddamn fuck.
You love it.
Now that that's out of the way, we here at Throwing the Controller get together to talk about video games of all types, retro, current, whatever we choose. So join myself, Chris Barreras, Eric Barajas, and our digital Jedi, Brian Warren, as we dive into the world of video games.
Let's give the people what they want.
And join our Facebook group, the Speakeasy Video Game Group.
I'm Gina Linetti, and I approve this message. I love you!
Hi, this is Mark.
And this is Dave.
Okay.
What?
What do you mean, what? Why do you sound slutty?
I was trying something new. You didn't like it?
No, I did not.
Did you think it sounded good?
And this is Dave.
Boy. All right, we're from Sequel This, a show where we attempt to write sequels to some of your favorite movies, such as Ghostbusters 3, Goonies 2, and Gremlins 3.
Well, you can check out all of our shows over at sequelthis.podbean.com. We're on Stitcher, iTunes, Google Play, all the major pod places.
And if you can't find an episode that interests you, or you have a great suggestion, or a pitch yourself, we want to hear it from you. So please, email us at sequelthis@gmail.com and drop us a line.
And remember to flesh it out.
What's wrong with you?
Everything and nothing.
All right, Chris. Well, let's roll that trailer for Other Halves from 2015.
What is this app? Other Halves is a revolutionary dating app that analyzes the things you do on the internet every day. From posting on social media, to eating in restaurants, to playing games. And find your perfect match.
But it hasn't been tested. There are bugs in there somewhere. We just haven't found them yet.
What possible bugs? This is the real me.
I'll be honest. I don't think I want to see everything about me.
The app. There's something wrong with it. People are acting crazy. I'm acting crazy.
It's supposed to find our other halves.
I think it's working just fine.
That's certainly different, my friend.
Yes, yes, it is. Well, before we begin talking about the movie, Tim, do you want to explain to the audience how we came about this film?
Well, we got an email from actually the director, Matthew T. Price, and he said, "Hey, do you guys want to review the movie?" And I'm like, sure. And it was just a scheduling issue with us, with our shows, because he emailed us, I want to say, around November,
yeah,
if I'm not mistaken. And we had already planned out the rest of our, the episodes for our Thanksgiving and for our Christmas. And I'm like, and then we're going on break. So I'm like, sure, we'll review it for our fourth season opener. And he was more than kind enough to supply us with the materials. And we watched it and reviewed it. And which was really interesting is I had really never given it much thought before, but wanting to do making this a better, more well-rounded episode, I decided to do a quick Google search for different dating apps and sites. So for all you single people out there, Chris, here are a few of the most well-used and well-rated sites as of January 17th, 2018. Zook, it comes in at a strong 9.9. Elite Singles is at 9.5. Match, which everybody's pretty much heard of, is in at 9.0. And Silver Singles for Mature Dating is in at 8.8. Our Time is in at 8.5, which is another 50 and up group. Senior People is in at 8.1 for another 50 and up group. Black People Meet is in at 8.0, and POF is in at 7.7. So, Chris, time to get your profile updated and out there. And let's not forget Christian Mingle.
Wait! You forgot another one too. Isn't there one called Farmer Singles? Although I don't have a farm, so
yeah.
I guess we're running on that one.
Yeah, I was just doing the top Google date, the top dating apps.
I gotta tell you for a moment there. I mentioned farmers, whatever, single or mingle, but I remember I was at work at a restaurant, and you know we got a TV up there, and there was a commercial for that. And when I saw that, I actually thought that was a joke at first, because I was like, "Are they serious?" And it turns out they were serious, but I was like, "What?"
That's crazy, man.
I didn't realize farmers were that lonely, you know?
Yeah, I can make a couple of farming jokes, but I don't think that's really appropriate.
Okay, all right. We're trying to be a tasteful show for once, but...
Since when?
That's why I said for once, but it's...
Is that a New Year's resolution?
I don't know if it was a New Year's resolution. It was just maybe by choice, but, you know? He emailed us. He told us about this movie he made.
Yes.
And so
I checked out the trailer and I got back to him. I said, "Well, this it does look interesting. We'd be honored to give our honest opinion and review it." And so here we are, 2 months later.
So I guess I should go into our plot synopsis for this movie.
Yes.
So yes, the title of the film is Other Halves. It was from 2015. It was directed by Matthew T. Price, written by Matthew T. Price and Kelly Moore. Other Halves takes place in San Francisco, and we are introduced to the film's two main female characters through a series of brief cuts. First, we see Jasmine, played by Mercedes Manning, waking up on the floor of a nonspecific room, and then we see Devin, played by Lauren Lankus, lying down on a park bench. While Devin is getting her exercise on out in the park, Jasmine finds herself completely naked with some bloodstains on her body. It doesn't help matters much that Jasmine looks to see a dead man lying right next to her, too. So
I hate that when that happens.
Don't you, Tim? Don't you?
Hey, that's my line to you, Chris.
So, confused and bewildered by this discovery, Jasmine does everything she can to cover up any evidence of her being there. Clearly, out of the two, it's Jasmine that's having a very interesting day. Anyways, Jasmine and Devin are computer programmers who are working on a special dating app titled Other Halves. On the surface, it looks like just another one of those dating apps that we've all seen before, but this one is different. This app can hook you up with your match via comparing your social life and personality to the other person's. Also involved with Other Halves are programmers Sean, played by Sam Schweigert, Beth, played by Megan Hui, and Jana, played by Melanie Frederick. Oh, and then there's Ellie, played by Leanna Liu, who likes to claim that she came up with the idea, even though she didn't put any team effort in designing the app. Jasmine hopes to have this new app out for public consumption within 10 hours, so the team has to work diligently to figure out all the bugs and kinks. But inasmuch as this team of techies know their stuff, they are not fully prepared to realize that there is a slight glitch in the raw data. Basically, if one looks too deep into the data, the Other Halves app brings out the alternate personality of an individual, freeing them from any moral inhibitions. But that turns out to be a bad thing because, well, wouldn't you know, it also reveals your own murderous side as well. As the night goes on, Devin becomes aware that something is up with the app, but will she be able to stop this new creation from destroying her coworkers and from going public as well? So that's the plot line of Other Halves in a nutshell. So I watched the screener that was provided to us by the director. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting, didn't in his ad, because he sent us the press material for it too as well.
Correct.
Yeah, and I think at one point he said that it was a, he was advertising it as a no-budget movie.
Yeah, micro-budget.
Oh, micro-budget. Okay, micro-budget. But I have to say, it doesn't feel that way.
Not at all. I was pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, me too, because it all takes place mostly in one location with a few small minor areas in other spots, but I was a little surprised by that. I didn't think it was very micro budget at all. I mean, it was
shot in one location, but it didn't feel that way at all. I mean, I totally get what you're saying. It didn't feel like a micro budget at all or low budget.
And I will say this too. I did find the central concept of the idea of this app being in a certain way causing people to kill everybody. Yes. Because It reminds me very much of the David Cronenberg movie Videodrome from 1983. Actually, the movie does kind of have a strange Cronenberg inspiration underneath it. I don't know if Matthew Price was inspired by any of Cronenberg's films. I mean, that's just a guess on my part, but I could kind of
see. Won't have to assume he was.
Yeah. I mean, but I did nevertheless find the concept very interesting, and I thought, you know, I mean, for a quote unquote micro budgeted film unquote, it was pretty decent. I didn't really have any big problems with it. I mean, it's a film that you try to make the best that you can out of the situations that you have available. So, and I think it worked out fairly well for him. So, I mean, what did you think, Tim?
I liked the trailer a lot, and tuning into the movie, I was really pleasantly surprised about how it was filmed and shot, and even the music and the lighting they used. It was very, very well done.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
I felt like you said, very Cronenberg-esque in some aspects, and yeah, it was. I'm trying to find the right words, and the words aren't coming to me right now, which they should.
Well, it
also felt almost kind of like with some of the lighting, almost kind of like Gyllo as well. People have used that to describe this film as well, and they wouldn't be wrong.
I could see some of the visual aspects of the Italian Gyllo in the film,
right?
Even though it's not one, but
And what I really like, some of the dialogue is very snappy between the actors and actresses.
I like the dialogue a little bit. I thought when they started getting into the technical stuff, it kind of goes over your head a little bit too much. But it made sense for where they were trying to go with how they're trying to present the characters, because these are all basically computer programmers and everything. But that's like a minor kind of quibble thing.
Well, and you know, honestly, I'm kind of cool with that. I know the writer, director, and producer Matthew Price and Kelly Moore, they have close ties to the tech community, and they advise them on all the programming jargon for the characters.
Okay,
so that's put out there. So I mean, personally, I look at it that way. It's like, yeah, I don't know what the hell they're talking about. But when my wife starts talking about, because she's works in IT and not like what they're doing, but when she starts throwing out technical mumbo jumbo, I just go, I just nod my head like one of those like little like bobblehead dogs, you know, like okay.
Sure, did you ever watch the movie with you again and say, can you tell me if what they're saying here is really accurate?
No. But it's kind of like even when you're watching like those medical like TV shows and dramas, and it's like, sure, whatever you say. Yeah.
Yeah, the clogged artery over here is, okay, you know what? We'll buy it. We'll buy it.
I'll buy that for a dollar.
Well, we should probably start breaking this one down here. So, like I mentioned earlier in the synopsis, it opens with the introduction of our two characters, Jasmine and Devin, and it's basically presenting them to us in, I guess you can say, the mourning situations that they are in. You know, through a series of cuts, you know, we see Jasmine, played by Mercedes Manning, waking up on the floor, and then it cuts to Devin outside in the park doing exercising and that kind of thing, and it just cuts back and forth, which leads to the title sequence. But it was very interesting how, I got to say, kudos to the director to beginning this movie within a couple of minutes by having the character Jasmine wake up on the floor, and then we get a wide shot of her naked with the blood stains on her.
Now, depending on how you look at it, which cut you watch, if you watch the director's cut, there is an extra 7 seconds, Chris. you want to talk about that briefly?
Oh, yeah. Well, okay. It was definitely in the version I saw. So
yes, it was in the screener's copy. Now I watched the two different versions, and there's exactly 7 seconds missing. And
okay. Well, basically, the 7 seconds that are missing, folks, are it's a wider shot of when Jasmine discovers the dead man right next to her, and he's naked too. So you get them both in the same shot, and they're both fully nude. So.
Yes, and then,
I guess who had a problem with that?
Amazon had a problem with the 7 seconds, so they had to recut the film and take those 7 seconds out. Well, no, they didn't have a problem. Amazon still had it, but it was came up like on a second page search of when you looked for the movie, and so it was behind. I guess they called it a gate, and so once they took those 7 seconds out, it became up. Then it popped up in the normal search engine, and people could be able to see it. More readily available to.
Okay.
So it is on Amazon. Like I said, without those 7 seconds, and you can also buy the the physical hard copy, the DVD, which is also uncut with those 7 seconds included. and you can buy that off Amazon. And I hope I'm pronouncing the word correctly. Kunaki, and that's another video service that gives a bigger cut to the creators, more so than Amazon. So if you want to support indie horror, you buy it there. So anyway, that's what I've got on that.
Yeah, but in that scene, basically, we see Jasmine trying to like cover up the crime of her being there, you know, through the series of cuts where she's like taking bleach and like putting, just wiping off blood and wiping off all these things.
Yeah, fingerprints and, off light switches and, you know, knives and whatever else.
Right. So then we then cut to the building that they're working in, preparing this app for other, for what was being called Other Halves.
Yes.
And, you know, we're also introduced to the other characters involved. There's Sean, played by Sam Schweikert. Beth, played by Megan Hui, she's what you would probably call the Asian chick, basically. I mean, if you, and then there's
Token.
John. I'm sorry, what?
The Token.
Well, I'm not saying it that way, but
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, I understand. But,
and then there's Jana, played by Melanie Frederick. She's the here's a new one for you. She's the German chick, basically.
Yes. And then you get the Mike. You know, going for boyfriend of the world.
Yeah, the played title. By Carson. Yeah, he played by Carson Nicely, who's the boyfriend of Beth. You know, he comes in and he's pretty much the perfect boyfriend. You know, like he brings cookies for everybody and he knows what everybody wants.
Yes, and all the girls are swooning over him, and so obviously there's Sean played by Sam. There's already some sort of tension there because he also likes Beth.
Yeah. But as all this is going on, Jasmine is trying to get everything ready because they're hoping after 10 hours of getting all everything, you know, set up, getting the app all together working, she wants to get it out to the public right away. So they're basically staying in this building to spend 10 hours to work on this thing. And at one point in the movie, which kind of gives indication that something is up in terms of where the plot's going to go, we get a shot of Sean looking at the raw data, and it's presented in, like, going very fast, so it's, like, in varying colors and whatnot. It's basically all the information, or everybody's information, and he starts looking at it, and you get that nice little, you know, music cue where it sounds like a violin or whatever just playing very quickly or something like that.
Yes.
It's hard for you to describe. I'm not a very big music descriptive person, but, you know. But that kind of sets up the mood, I guess, for where that something is amiss here. We just don't know what it is yet. So,
right, and they and it's going by so fast, it almost looks like it could give someone a seizure almost. You know?
Like, oh yeah, absolutely. Like in that Simpsons episode where they go to Japan and they watch that
the cartoon.
Yeah, and they all just have seizures. We're also, but occasionally the film kind of cuts back and forth between what's going on with the group inside this building and then what has happened with the Jasmine character on two previous other incidences. There's one where she apparently was hooking up with this one female intern.
Yeah.
It was, and she basically killed her.
Right.
And she's trying to figure out what she's got to do with the body, and she calls on the friend Ellie, played by Leanna Liu, who was originally somewhat involved with the creation of this app, but
yeah,
she was
very briefly.
Yeah, she just came up with the idea. She didn't design it. She didn't produce it. She didn't even contribute any technical aspects to it. The concept,
basically. Yeah, which was a very big sticking point with Jana, she's like, how can she take credit for this? She didn't do anything. She was really extremely pissed, and in a way,
every right to be because at one point in the film, which we'll get to, Ellie tries to like strong arm her way into the office and make it seem like she's part of the team, but there's another moment in this film that's very interesting. And once again, kudos to the director for managing to pull this off, because it's very rare nowadays in these types of movies, but we get a nice shower sequence. They shower in the locker room. They're not in one shower. They're in a shower, but they're not showering like together. Yeah. But they're showering in the same area, in the same vicinity. Jasmine and Devin, and they're suddenly startled by the fact that somebody is lurking around in the women's locker room,
right?
Watching them, you know.
Yeah,
I love the bit where, you know, like something got knocked over.
It was the wind?
Yeah, and Devin said something like, well, first it's the wind, then all of a sudden Freddy Krueger shows up and tries to kill us, or whatever.
Yes, yes.
So already we have the movie literally playing on the whole horror-themed tropes, as it would be.
Very true, very true.
But, so
I think she even mentions that, like, maybe even a cat, right, or something like that.
Oh, yeah. Like, the first thing is a cat.
Yeah, an open window, a cat, you know, whatever. And then Devin takes off and wraps herself in the towel and takes off after, and then with Jasmine, like, in tow, going after her.
Yeah. And actually, it would have been funny if they both forgot to put on their towels and they just went chasing.
much like My Bloody Valentine, where the hooker is just running out
in the
parking lot, just completely
runs
in the buff.
Runs out in the parking lot, has no care in the world if anybody notices her or not. But and then of course afterwards we do get that introduction of the boyfriend character. Yeah,
the too good to be true boyfriend.
Oh yeah. Well, was he too good to be true? Wow.
Dun dun dun.
I mean, so as everything is going on, Jana gets very nervous around him, and she accidentally pours her coffee on Mike's shirt.
Right.
I wouldn't say pours. She literally throws it on his shirt.
Yeah, yeah. Because she doesn't like to be touched.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, that's because Mike was giving Devin a massage.
Right.
You know, that's how perfect this guy is. He can make excellent cookies. He knows what everybody wants, and he gives great massage.
And he's a good listener.
He's a good listener, too.
And there's even a word Jasmine thinks, is he straight?
Oh, yeah. And he has to have the prerequisite line. No, yes, I am. I like boobies, you know?
Yes.
So Jana, you know, just hurls the cup of coffee or looked more like it was hot chocolate or whatever on his shirt. And he takes it off, and he actually has a nice build, apparently. So, and he says, is there anywhere where I can shower? Because I just feel all sticky or whatever.
Yes.
What he heads down to the kitchen. If you want to take it from there, Tim, he heads down to the kitchen and
he heads down to the kitchen. He asks his girlfriend Beth to go get a shirt out of the car, out of his car, and he's gonna go clean up. And Sean goes with her to, you know, because there's some kind of goofball out there, stalking, or not stalking, but just walking around.
Yeah, but he just wants to be with her because he really likes her.
Exactly. So he's in the break room or whatever it is, in the kitchen, you know, doing the dishes because he's Mr. Nice Guy, you know, he's going to...
Yeah, and I think that's the reason why his real name is Carson Nicely.
Yes.
Did you notice that when looking at the cast?
Yeah, that's a funny coincidence. he's down there, you know, doing the dishes and, you know, trying to clean up the coffee stickiness from his shirt or his body, whatever. And, a mysterious figure lurking, maybe the wind. Maybe the shape, maybe the cat.
Maybe it's the cats. You know, yeah. I mean, who knows?
Anyway, and of course, you know, there's a ginormous butcher knife there because, you know, every break room needs to have, you know, one of those big knives for cutting cake and stuff.
Absolutely.
So, you know, there's a nice established shot of the butcher knife and Mike cleaning everything. And then, you know, he leaves the break room to go, I don't know, to the bathroom or to another sink or something like that. Yeah, I guess another sink or bathroom to use some other soap or something like to wash his abs. his sticky, sticky abs. And he comes back, and he's attacked by a mysterious figure. Now, we don't see the figure, per se. We see his hands, or the person's hands and gloves, but then we see the knife going into attacking Mike. And then we see him fall down, and he's pulled off screen, leaving a nice little bloody trail in the break room. So,
as well as a bloody knife in the dishwashing machine.
In the sink, yes.
In the sink, yeah. So basically, after that, now we are introduced also to Elle, played by Leanna Liu, who strong arms her way into the office and basically tries to make it seem like she's the one that's like really participated in this whole thing. And
right.
As we mentioned earlier, Jana is not very happy about that, and Jasmine then asks her to leave, and Elle does so. And then she runs into Sean outside, and she tries doing the same exact thing, like, oh yeah, I treated this thing, even though, so.
Yeah, and kind of watch your back kind of thing, you know?
Oh, I know, yeah, she does, she's about to leave, but then she stops, and she says to him, she says basically to him to watch out for them. He doesn't understand why, but it's like one of those throwaway lines you put in the movie, so.
One of my favorite lines was when they were trying, it was between Devin and Jana, and I think it's Sean, because he's asking. Oh yeah, Sean asks who Ella is, and Devin goes, oh, it's a long story, and it's too much to get into, and then too much to go into right now, and then Jana quips and goes, no, it's not. She goes, you're right, no, it's not really a long story at all.
Yeah, she says it's a short story. It's an extremely short story.
Yeah, short story. Yeah, no.
But so now. I believe Beth is worried about what's happened to her perfect boyfriend, Mike, because she keeps texting him and he hasn't answered anything back yet.
Well, they hook up in the break room for a minute too. I'm getting things a little bit confused. Backwards.
Oh no, that's fine. They were originally in the break room at one point. Then she left, and then of course Mike gets killed, and then she doesn't know what happened to him. Yeah. She thinks he's around somewhere, and so Sean decides to go with her simply because of the fact he says, well, don't forget there's a creepy person wandering around here that we don't know anything about. So,
right.
So they end up in a different room in the building where it has a big screen TV.
Mm-hmm.
And they're kind of just laughing and cavorting and just telling, just being funny. And he turns on the TV so he can activate the app and play the raw data on there. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, they watch that, and then all of a sudden it cuts to them making out on the pool table.
Yes. Because they're each other's other halves.
Yes. They have somehow managed to now hook up because of this, and we get to weird territory when Jasmine walks into the room and finds them making out, and she just reaches and grabs for the phone, right?
Right.
It's a very strange sequence.
She like pops up like freaking Nosferatu in the background.
Yeah, pops up,
and then she just conveniently just kind of sashays her way over to the pool table where they're freaking. I guess they're so into each other they don't notice anything else going on around them. And then she grabs her phone and then sneaks back into the background, and then she's off to do whatever with the phone.
Yeah, yeah. She like just sneaks out, and they're just still busy just making out on that pool table, you know.
Yeah.
And then, so I'm trying to think here. So after that sequence, it's basically Devin and Jana. We had that scene that comes in afterwards where they're talking together and how Jana's very upset over Elle trying to basically walk into this whole thing and try to take the whole thing,
Right. And then Devin, talks to her out on the fire escape, trying to calm her down a little, saying, do what I do. Just don't care about it. Just whatever, just kind of let it roll off your back, like it's not a big thing. And so that's kind of like Lauren's role, or Devin's role in this whole thing, trying to calm down Jana.
Yeah, she's kind of like the free spirit trying to basically the free spirit that's trying to make John understand that, you know, whatever, it's not a big deal. What's she going to do about it, you know, all that stuff. So.
Exactly.
And so they're trying to, John and Devin are trying to figure out what's going on. And at one point, the power kind of goes out. The server goes down, too.
Yeah.
And
that's
Devin
not good with that launch date quickly approaching.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say, you got like about a couple more hours to go. I mean, you got to make sure that server's up and running. Jesus. Yes. So while Devin's trying to check the power and everything, it turns out that Elle snuck back into the building and is trying to...
Or did she ever really leave?
Well, no, she didn't really leave, no. Yeah. But, I mean, it made it think like she left.
Yes,
but
correct.
She stuck in, and she hooked up her a laptop to their server, and she's trying to, like, get information about the stuff, about the app that they're putting together. And then suddenly, once when Devin walks in, you know, Elle has to hide in the corner, and she turns on her phone, and all of a sudden she's looking at the raw data. And then, you know, once again, now, something's with that raw data that they keep looking at. So.
Now, this scene in particular, I liked when she hid, and then she was, like, around the corner, like, you could see Devin trying to fix the server, and you see Elle, but she's all around the corner, it's dark out, she's looking at the phone, but then you get that, like, kind of, like, almost like a robotic, like cat's eye, like, glean off the screen.
Where her eye also looks like it's starting to glow green looking
yes,
at that.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. I thought that was pretty creepy.
Yeah, very nice visual touch there. That was very good. I like that, too. And so then we then cut back to Jana, who's busy working on the computer, and then she gets a text message from some anonymous person telling them, you know, do you know what this app does?
Right.
And
much like
Jana thinks...
I'm sorry, much like Beth was getting the text messages from Mike saying, you were cheating on me. They're getting these random texts. Well, no, sorry.
Yeah.
Beth was getting it from Mike's phone, but yeah, John is getting it from...
That comes a little later. But,
oh, I'm sorry. Oopsie.
No, that's fine, but we'll get to that. That's very interesting, too. So basically, so then, you know, John is trying to, like, you know, going back and forth texting Devin, because, you know, trying to find out what's going on with the server, and then texting this other person that's trying to tell him, you know, do you know what this app does and everything? And of course, Jana thinks it's Elle texting. And then all of a sudden, Elle shows up and strangles poor Jana to death.
Yes.
So, and then, of course, once when the lights come back on, all of a sudden, Elle has no idea what she's done. Mm-hmm. And Jasmine shows up and tries to comfort her. But at first, Elle is shocked by the whole thing, but then within... like a nanosecond, she starts saying, but it felt so good. It was like, she felt like a rush.
Yeah, she felt so free, you know, it was like fantastic. She felt fantastic, like the best she's ever felt in her entire life. And I'm like, wow, okay.
Yeah, like talk about like a quick 180, you know?
And Jasmine's like, yes, it's a wonderful feeling. And she's hugging her and like, okay, so.
Right. And then there's another moment in the film where Devin, when she looks at the raw data, it's very strange how it's put together, but she starts looking at it, and then all of a sudden she wakes up on the fire escape. I believe she's completely nude laying out there.
Yes.
And, you know, then she goes back inside, but we don't really know what exactly happened. It was very strange how that was put together. But we do see Jasmine walk into the break room to find... Sean pretty much finished making out with Beth on the table, and she's passed out, and he's all panicky and everything.
Yeah, and he's like, and she's like, oh, I respect her, I respect everybody, but you know, just you know, kind of flipping out because the high or the side effect wore off, and now he's realized what he's done. And,
right. And she's like, in fact, Jasmine's telling him, it's okay, it's fine.
I'll take care of it. He goes, what are you going to tell her? And then this is what very cryptic what she says. Like, he goes, what are you going to tell her? He's like, what she needs to hear. I was like, that is so fucking cryptic. What the hell is that supposed to mean?
Well, and I love it too. Jasmine walks in there, and I want you to, for any of you out there that hasn't seen this movie, I want you to picture this for a moment. So Jasmine walks in. The girl Beth is lying on the pool table, and She's still clothed, but her wild-looking pink panties are hanging on the end of her feet, by her legs. Right around her ankles, yeah. And then Jasmine wakes her up, and, you know, she, you know, and Beth doesn't know what's happened, and she's talking to Jasmine for a few minutes, and you would think that... I was laughing, thinking about this, watching it. I was like, you would think that this girl would realize... You know, I feel a strange draft coming
There's a cold front coming up from the
yes,
south.
Yes, there's a cold front coming up. Because and I love it too, when she realizes that her panties are off, she just reaches out and pulls them back on. And of course, you know, Jasmine doesn't, it's like Jasmine kind of just doesn't notice at the same time too. I mean, she notices, but she doesn't say anything about it. It's a very strange scene. It's very strange.
Awkward.
Yeah, well, it was beyond awkward. It was like, what's going on? So as the movie progresses, we begin to find out, well, Devin begins to find out that there's something not quite right about the app, because they don't understand why they're getting, have this one area of the app that shows all this raw data. I believe at one point she says, well, that's how the way our minds process it. That's not what it actually looks like in real life. But it's a very interesting sort of moment that they mentioned too.
Right.
But as the film progresses, you know, they all basically become inflicted with this app. And yes, folks, it's basically about a killer app.
Well, just like the tagline, it's the last dating app you'll ever use.
It is. And that's the weird thing about it, why I make that comparison to David Cronenberg and Videodrome. Because Videodrome is about this television producer, played by James Woods, who finds a secret channel on some cable service that shows nothing but torture, you know, people being tortured, you know, like kind of like an S&M sexual thing.
Right.
And as he's watched it, it begins to affect him and his viewpoint of reality, and that's why they call it Videodrome. Oh. So it's very interesting how that Cronenberg connection comes up with this. This is just basically about an app that once you look at it, it begins to bring about your own inhibitions, because the concept of it is about your other half. So it's like a Jekyll and Hyde story almost, sense.
It's basically you without like your senses, and you're relying on your base instincts and your needs, and if you forget about, you know, your what's the word I'm looking for?
You forget about your moral.
Yeah, your moral compass is out the window. Yeah, basically.
Yeah, and your conscience and all that stuff too. Yeah. And that's one of the elements of the film that I did like. I mean, I really liked about it, because it's a very new and interesting idea, is what I'm saying.
I remember when I first watched the trailer, I was like, oh man, before watching the film, obviously, I'm like, man, this has got also shades of like maybe sometimes like 2001 Space Odyssey, HAL, where I thought it was the computers like maybe revolting, or the app revolting, and you know, and seeking out to wreak havoc. But
well, in one sense, it probably is. So. Yeah.
Well, kind of, but I mean, there's still the human element behind it. That So. HAL wasn't that way.
Yeah. Well, this is like creating something that you think is going to help, but instead it ends up being basically the monster that ends up consuming them in one sense. So as the movie progresses, then Devin goes off. No, actually, no. Devin goes off, and then... Well, wait, no, I'm sorry. Actually, now I just remembered it. I watched this movie two times, folks, and I'm trying to put all the pieces together. But anyways, then Sean goes off and ends up in that other room where they have the TV, and he finds out that he's the one that was watching Devin and Jasmine in the bathroom.
He was the wind.
He was the wind, basically. Or he was the cat, basically.
The open window, the cat, whatever.
Yeah. So, and then... Elle shows up and, you know, tells him, you know, basically that this whole thing has made you free and everything. And then, of course, the image on the TV reveals that that it was, well, who killed Mike, Tim?
Who killed Mike? It would be Sean.
Yes.
with the butcher knife in the kitchen. It feels like Clue. It was Sean with a butcher knife in the kitchen.
and of course, she, you know, she tells him about how this whole thing would be able to set him free. And,
yes.
You know, she's like, in a way, it's like, so are you not proud of what you've done and everything?
This is the creation. This is, you know, she's like, thinking like she's almost like Victor Frankenstein, you know, like just.
Yeah, I was thinking that too.
Like, and he's sitting there and he's like extremely, obviously, as like anybody would be, like most people would be extremely remorseful. Then that didn't work for Elle. So she took a knife and, you know.
Oh yeah. Yeah. She ends up stabbing this poor bastard. Or
yeah, slitting his throat. Yeah. Slitting his throat. Yeah.
Cutting this poor bastard to death. So she does that so she can get another high because she ends up rushing back into that office room.
Which is, if you think about it, it's the same time where Jasmine and Devin, like, leave. Devin is upset, so she takes off, I believe, correct?
Yeah, she takes off because she's trying to figure out what's going on. She's got to clear her head and everything.
Right.
So then, once she leaves, then all of a sudden, Elle comes running in.
Covered in blood.
Her hands.
And her face, and she's like, oh, this was fantastic. The second time's even better than the first. And it's like, oh, Christ, she's off her rocker completely.
I know, and Beth looks like she's so confused, and she gets up, and then before she leaves, yeah, Elle turns to her and says, you know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah. So Beth takes off after Devin. Devin now is having, like, one of these... bad acid trips. Like, she's, like, trying to get away, just basically get away out of the building.
And, yeah.
Now, again, very unique and different lighting used here to make this almost feel like a surreal, almost like a very trippy experience for the viewer and for the character of Devon. And, you know, the elevator opens up, and all of a sudden, she sees herself. She's fighting. Yeah. She's basically fighting herself, and so she's fighting, and she ends up getting the upper hand, and she ends up killing her other half or herself. But then it's revealed to be who, Chris?
Oh, it's Beth. She came down in the elevator,
and
of course, Devin's mind's been playing tricks on her, so she thinks she's killed herself, mm-hmm. You know, or her other half. But it turns out she's just stabbed poor Beth,
yes.
And killed her. And now, you know, basically, you know, the shit has hit the fan in this movie.
And meanwhile, all the while, Ella and Jasmine are watching this on the security camera footage in the lobby.
Yeah, like it's some bizarre experiment.
Yeah, which is exactly how Elle makes it sound to be, you know. So it's just bananas.
And then, of course, Devin ends up on the seventh floor, which... is where they have that big TV screen and everything. But once she gets in there, she finds, like, the place is basically decked out with the dead bodies and...
yeah, in a very kind of, like, macabre, like, art display.
Well, at one point, there's, like, plastic Coke bottles hanging from the ceiling and, you know... And the
different phones with the other halves app, like, yes. Flickering and just... Another very creepy, very atmospheric, well done scene.
Yeah, and then of course Elle shows up and tries to kill Devin. You know, in one of those big exciting sequences where, you know, basically the main villain gets together and, you know, they fight it out. And I actually like how this was done because once when Devin gets the drop on Elle, she uses
keyboard.
What it's called. Oh, keyboard. Yeah, she uses the keyboard and she starts beating her to death with it.
Yes. But if you take a look at that, there's a quick shot of Elle on her back and with Devin on top of her, and Elle is almost like ecstatic because she wants to be like. That's it. Come on, bring it. You know, like
she's like, this is going to be the biggest high of my life, right. And it involves me being killed.
Exactly. So now. Devin's like you said, just almost like taking a baseball bat to her with the keyboard.
Oh yeah, she's wailing on her with it, man.
Right, and she gets up. She's covered like head to toe in blood. She runs. She goes back and finds Jasmine. Jasmine again is like, She's almost too calm, you know. and Devin's like, we've got to shut this thing down. This is going to create massive havoc. It's going to be horrible. And what does Jasmine say to Devon?
Oh, well, she's basic. I'm trying to remember the exact way
put it. Paraphrase.
It's just she talked about basically that this is what they have created or something like that.
And it's so freeing, and think about if everybody could be free, and then Devon is like saying, if everyone is doing this, it's going to be mass chaos. It's going to be, you know, there's no rules. She goes, exactly, there's no rules. I'm like, she goes, who? And then she starts bringing up like religion and the way you dress and all these different kind of like social norms that are put upon us or put upon people sometimes or put upon us. And, you know, she's like, but this frees you from all of this. This is, you know, this is the best. And she's like, no. She goes, this is not us. I'm with my moral compass, with my hang-ups, with everything, this makes me, not the other way around, not really, not going back to a basic, like, kill or be killed, you know, dog-eat-dog kind of, or dog-eat-dog world. So.
But, of course, Jasmine gets the upper hand and forces Devon to watch the raw data.
Right.
And then it's the next day, and they're both kind of like sitting on the couch, kind of not sure what's going on, what's happened.
Mm-hmm.
Devon gets up and walks to the washroom, and she looks at herself in the mirror, and she begins to be talking to her other half, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and she's saying, you know what we need to do now. You need to kill Jasmine, and Devon's like, no, I can't. She goes, well, I can, and I really like that the back and forth between the character. Or the character, well, the characters,
yes,
herself, and she's like, just do it, you know. And then, well, she looks at the phone, and there's a smile. And then the other half of her other half on the other side of the mirror walks away with a big butcher knife, and that's where the movie ends. So,
and I have to say, I wish the movie didn't end that way, because I would have liked to have at least seen Devon kill Jasmine or attempt to kill Jasmine. I felt like. You know, I felt like it was one of those endings where it's inconclusive. And I mean, even though you could probably say, well, you know, she is going to kill her. It's like, yeah, but I'd like to see it.
Right.
You know, I'd like to see the deed being done, so that way we as the audience can at least be satisfied. Or if she doesn't kill her, what if Jasmine kills Devon? You know, it's, you know, like, I'd say that's the one thing about the movie that I was a tad disappointed with, is I wished that it did have the fully conclusive ending that we all need, you know, because it felt like watching that ending to Sopranos.
Spoilers, I haven't seen that in Sopranos.
Well, no, okay. I've
heard of it being a kind of like being such a great series, and then being let down in the last like 5 minutes.
yeah, or like that movie by William Friedkin, Killer Joe. I don't want to give that away if no one's seen that, but
I get it. You want more of a well-rounded conclusion.
Well, I mean, and I understand what they're trying to do with it, but it's just that I kind of like that traditional way of at least bringing about that closure, you know, like, well, I...
And more importantly, is the app shut down, or is it now live, out of the beta testing?
Well, I guess it's live, because during the end of the credits, we see all these...
Oh, that is true. I didn't think of the credits with, like, yeah.
Well, I guess Devon didn't kill her. I mean, we don't know.
Yeah, we don't know.
But with that said, I did enjoy the film for what it was. I thought, you know, like I said, it for a quote-unquote no-budget, or micro-budget, I should say,
right,
movie, it didn't really feel that way. I mean, yes, it's limited characters, and it's a one-location thing, but it was fine.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I honestly didn't think it was a micro-budget film in that sense. So.
I honestly give it a thumbs up. In my opinion,
yeah, I'll give it a thumbs up too. I thought it did its job, with the exception of the ending. I thought it did its job fairly well.
Oh yeah,
so.
And what really kind of like sold me, but in the beginning with the commercial where, you know, she's talking about the other half, I thought that was extremely good and kind of freaky, And it reminded me of, I'm going to use this as an example. It's not a great movie either, but it's a guilty pleasure of mine, the Resident Evil movie, where they're talking about the Umbrella Corporation. It's like, Umbrella Corporation, we're life itself, you know, and it's like that, you know, just a really, just kind of like very like dark commercial that's not supposed to be dark.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but there's something about it that's dark. Yeah, but, you know,
it just gets you right in the, like, it makes your hair stand up on the back of your neck, like, oh, that's kind of weird.
I love how in that, because we had mentioned it earlier, but, like, that opening sequence where the commercial for Other Halves,
right,
where it's Devin introducing it.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what I'm talking about,
But it's very interesting because in the movie, the Devin character is very, very active and very, very, I guess you could say, just very aware, and yet when she's in this commercial, she's very kind of, she almost talks like a drone, basically.
Well, I probably by the design.
Oh, yeah, by design, yeah, but it was just, I thought that was a very interesting contrast, what they did with that.
Oh, yeah, like I said, I'll give this movie a thumbs up. I thoroughly enjoyed it. Thank you, Matthew, for sending it to us.
I was going to say, I think is this the first time someone has emailed us and said, I have a movie, can you review it for me, please?
This is the first time that we were able to do it. It happened another time, and we were on another break. I was in the middle of moving to Minnesota, and we didn't have any of my stuff.
Oh, okay, yeah, that's right.
And it was just a scheduling conflict, and if you guys want us to check out your movie and review it and give us our honest opinion on your film, then, yeah, please send us an email to thathorseshowpodcast@gmail.com. We'll take a look at it, if we can.
I don't have much else to say about the movie. I mean, like I said earlier, I did enjoy it for what it was. I thought that, you know, it was very nicely done,
yeah,
you know, for the budget and everything. And, I mean, I don't have much else to say.
and there are really no fun facts for this, but I did notice something, and I think it's correct. If not, feel free to shoot me an email. But there's a scene where the girls are around the TV and are watching a movie, and it's called East of the Sun. Do you remember that, Chris? Remember that part? I mean, it was kind of almost like a flash frame.
Yes.
A little longer than a flash frame. Anyway, there is a scene where another man is standing on top of another man, like he just had just killed somebody, right? And
right.
There's a shot, a quick shot, of a man laying on the ground, presumably dead. I believe that is the director, writer, and director. So, much kind of like an Alfred Hitchcock kind of thing, making a quick appearance in.
So, and then of course the fact that, and this was a flashback sequence with with Devin, Jonna, and Elle in this room watching this movie that Jonna thinks is terrible, and it was called East of the Sun, right?
Right.
And you said it was played by the director, or you think it's played by the director?
Yeah. And that's the movie they gave one star to, and they're talking about the ratings, and it doesn't matter what do you rate it, it just matters that you watch it, or that it's, you know, get to download. I thought it was really, really funny. But that's all I have. There's really no more additional fun facts we have from this film that we haven't already covered. But I enjoyed it. I thought it was it's well worth your time to seek it out on Amazon or any of the other platforms we mentioned. You know, so that's all I got, bud.
Yeah. Well, I think we've talked all that we could about the movie Other Halves. Tim, do you have anything else you'd like to mention before we sign off for the day?
No, Chris. I believe, like you said, we've covered it all. We both enjoyed it. That's all I have.
All right. And then for our next episode, we're not going to – I think we can say that we're not going to announce it yet. We do have one lined up, right, Tim?
We most certainly do. I'm looking forward to it. But we're just hammering out the final details, and we should have something – for you guys on our official Facebook page, Twitter, all that good stuff. So just stay tuned to our social media accounts, and we'll let you know more very, very soon.
Yes, I mean, I think people notice that once in a while we will announce what our next episode is, but there are times where we want to keep you in suspense, you know? We feel that helps bring more people to it, in a way. So, So
we hope.
Well, we hope, yes. Yeah. But we're working on it. We do have an episode lined up, and hopefully it'll be out by, what do you think, Tim, by next month maybe? I mean, we're not sure yet, yeah, but...
I want to say Valentine's Day, but if not Valentine's Day, shortly thereafter.
All right, so just keep a look at it, folks, and we'll let you all know.
Yes. Good night.
Yeah, good night, folks.
Hey, guys. Well, that's the end of the episode. We hope you enjoyed listening to us as much as we did recording it. If you subscribe to us through iTunes, please leave us a note and a rating. Your feedback helps shape our show. If you would like to email us with questions, comments, or even a possible show idea, or just to say howdy, you can by emailing us at thathorseshowpodcast@gmail.com. We are also on Facebook. Just type in That Horse Show Podcast in the search bar, and we'll pop right up. Make sure to also find and like the Speakeasy Podcast Network's official Facebook page as well. That way you can keep up to date with all the network's great podcasts. We are also on the Twitter machine at THSP at That Horror Show 1. So be sure to stalk us there. Follow us there, and we'll follow you right back. Finally, I'm on Instagram at Tim at That Horror Show Podcast. So we'll see you around, and take care.
Well, that's the end of the episode.
Thank you for listening.